Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and Guests.
Welcome to the NZ Tech Podcast. This is episode number 84, I think we're up to, guys. This is Paul Spain.
Nate Dunn.
John Lai.
John.
Yes.
Tell us about your shoes, just before we get into all the other topics. We've got to start with this.
Okay.
This is some cool technology right here.
Well, maybe give listeners a bit of context. A bit of context is why we start off just talking about John's random shoes.
So basically, these are not just any other shoes. They are the Marty McFly's Nike Air Max. If you don't know them, you can do a Google search, and you can easily see an article about on them on Gizmodo. So they are pretty tech savvy. So which, you know, if to those who kind of follow Back to the Future, will know what those shoes are. You know, you put it in, automatic straps. You know, for any nerd or any geek like myself, you know, you go crazy. So when I saw that, and then they made only, I think, 600 available, I had to buy one. And that cost me about $6,000, which I don't know how I'm going to get that back. But hopefully this will become a real good investment. Crossing fingers. But yes, I'll hopefully get a chance to bring it in the next time whenever I do come back.
Excellent.
And yeah, so yeah.
We'll do that.
Do they actually auto, so just like in the movie, they actually tighten up and strap themselves?
Yes.
So they got batteries in them?
Yes. And they have lights as well.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's some cool technology.
Very cool.
Right here on the NZ Tech Podcast, and where all the cool geeky, ticky, fun stuff happens.
See, who said guys can buy shoes, right?
Brilliant. So, John, now it's been a while since you've been on the podcast. It's been probably what, a couple of months?
Yeah, a couple of months. And then you went on a world trip covering events.
Yeah. Now, this week is a big week for you.
Yes.
Tell us what is happening in the world that listeners might be interested, that you, along with your social media NZ hat on and a couple of other partners have put together.
Yeah, I think the last time when I was on here, you know, we had a quick little yarn about Project Revolution, which is basically a digital conference that ourselves at Social Media NZ and also AUT and also US Embassy decided to put on. And then now we are basically, as I'm talking to you, you know, we are 2 days out from the event, so it's pretty exciting and kind of nerve-wracking at the same time. But it's all fun. But yeah, that's just around the corner. You know, we've got all the speakers packed down, and then we're just at the stage where we're getting things, all the collaterals and all that things done.
Excellent.
For Thursdays. So it's crazy craziness.
Great. So it's all about the conference is going to be about social media, yeah, so digital, and
so without kind of making people roll their eyes when we when they talk about social media. I think how I'm taking an approach to this event is basically, you know, we're looking at the bigger digital ecosystem and looking at how it impacts everything that is within it, whether it's social media and, you know, whether it's social media as part of it or technology. It's just how the digital space impact us personally and professionally.
Cool.
And so that's kind of looking at, and then we have three sort of streams. So you got your conceptual, inspirational, and what's
the, sorry. And the other one.
And the other one. I can't believe it. Yep, that's how my brain's been fried.
No, you get that when you're this close to an event and you've been working day and night. So understand it.
Yeah.
No problem. Well, what we'll do is we'll put a link up to the site so people can go and have a look and check out the speaker lineup, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And just double check all the details if they want to jump on in and grab a last minute ticket, because there's still some tickets left.
Yeah, it's reaching, you know, it's something that we're kind of proud of. It's reaching to a point where it's capacity, and I think there's only, you know, I can count on both hands on the tickets there's left. So that's, you know, that's a good thing, especially for it being our first kind of event. So, but to those people who kind of want to join in the conversation, at the end of the show, I'll tell them how to kind of, if they can't go to the conference, they can join in on the online world as well.
Great. That's excellent. Now, quite a bit going on in the new, the current, and the tech world.
Yes.
However you want to call it. this week. Apple and Samsung seem to have sort of
lock horns.
Well, they have been for a little while, haven't they? And the court case that where Apple started suing Samsung and Samsung sort of was suing them back has drawn to some sort of conclusion, although there's always, you know, future phases to these things, right? This was, you know, the judges and so on had said, hey, you guys should work out your own settlement rather than bringing this to a full trial and to a jury. But they didn't manage to do that, and so the jury have sided with Apple and have said that Samsung have to pay them $1 billion. And now Apple are working to get a bunch of devices, smartphones and so on, pulled off the market from Samsung in the US. This is pretty huge, isn't it?
It's.
I didn't think. I honestly thought it would be. I'm a big Samsung fanboy. I've got pretty much everything Samsung. Not on purpose, but they just seem to run really, really good stuff. I'm amazed that they took it out. And I was reading a couple of commentaries about it, and they said that there was something like 150, I think, or 220 pages of jury instructions. So it's just too much stuff for a jury really to understand. Is what I thought, but what I want to know.
Well,
is
also the jury turned it around in 3 days, right? Which you know, how could you do that with 220 pages of material?
Mm. With this particular one, does that mean that now Samsung, all this technology that they're pushing out, they're going to have to pay Apple a royalty, I assume, because they're using their patents?
And I don't think so necessarily. I think this, you know, the billion pays back for any things that they've breached in the past, but. Yeah, remember the newer phones aren't being certainly at this stage targeted by Apple for being taken off the market. So you know, I heard a comment some time ago around the time the Galaxy S3 was launched, suggesting that it was designed by lawyers. you know, with really the comment being that you know they were making sure that there was nothing about. The Galaxy S3 that could get them in any sort of legal strife, and it is a very different phone to the iPhone. That's for sure. I don't know what's your take, John? What do you think about this? Does this make sense, or could it be somewhat a reflection of who was on the jury? You know, if we're talking about a US audience, I think this was in San Francisco, wasn't it?
Yes.
The case, and you know that's kind of the home base for Apple, and Apple users maybe some sort of a leaning more towards a local company than one in Korea. What do you think?
You know, it's easy to kind of speculate, especially at this point in time. But I think at the end of the day, I do not want to be in Samsung shoes. You know, the other I think was yesterday night when I was turning on the news. You know, their stock went down like there's no tomorrow. So, you know, the interesting thing about this whole thing is now, because the can of worms is already open. It'll be interesting to see if there will be any more that's been opened and anyone will kind of open it because, hey, look, if Apple is doing this, are there any things that's out there that's not been kind of seen yet? So I think from a moving forward perspective, it'll be interesting to see how many more kind of dark areas in the tech world will start to kind of pop up. So it's for me. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it because it's such an interesting case, you know. Like there was, like Nate said, there's 200 pages of legal stuff, and then straight away the decision was done like that, which is interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was very quick. One thing is that they're both very innovative companies,
yeah.
And you know, both are very design focused. I mean, that's a change that Samsung have made in recent years. Apple was always, you know, from early on, very, you know, with Steve Jobs at the helm, was always a design led business, and they continue to be so. So yeah, I'm fascinated to see how this actually pans out over a bit of time and what it will actually mean for us in the areas where the two companies compete. So yeah, at the moment they don't compete in the TV space directly. They're, you know, very different products. We've got the Apple TV as a set-top box. We don't have an actual TV from Apple, although there's been a lot of speculation about it. But you know, smartphones and tablets is where they really cross over, and you know, you've got to give it to Apple that they really have led the way in both of those spaces, in the tablet and in the smartphone. But I guess, you know, the question is, with the world changing, what's it going to look like, you know, going forward? Now this is out of the way, you know, Samsung seem to be veering in a slightly different direction. They're covering multiple operating systems with, you know, Windows as well as Android. There's, I think, some uncharted waters ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll keep watching that, and hopefully there's not too many of these other sort of, you know, legal battles that sort of, you know, potentially get in the way of innovation. But I also wonder whether in some ways this inspires some innovation and fresh thinking, because, you know, this case was really about, you know, the from Apple's perspective, certainly their... you know, they were going after Samsung for trying to make products that, you know, looked like Apple products. So if this inspires, you know, more new thinking of coming up with something that's different and fresh, which I think we've already seen from Samsung in other areas such as the S3, then it's not necessarily a bad thing in those regards.
What are your guys' thoughts in regards to competitors? Because this is going on there, and then you've got competitors who are in the background looking at this going, do they see this as an opportunity, go, hey, let them battle it out, we'll try to claim their customers? Is that the right word to say? Do you think there's that kind of small doorway for them to kind of do something about it?
I think Apple and Samsung, I mean, they really are, they're the two leading smartphone manufacturers in the world, so I don't think that's about to change anytime soon. But you know, maybe I guess there were some comments, because the focus was on Samsung's Android handsets, and maybe that would open some sort of door for Windows. I personally don't see quite the relevance of that in this particular case, because the understanding is you know, it's a different level. It's not an operating system focus, and the things that were Apple-like were the hardware and an adjusted user interface that Samsung had delivered, rather than the native Android one. So I don't know. We'll see. Unless you've got any thoughts on that, Nate?
I think it's good to force competitors to look at alternate things. The first one that pops to mind is the, you know, Microsoft's new Metro interface. You've got Apple that's very much centric around icons, and you click an icon and get into it. You've got the Samsung model of having widgets on your desktop, which is a very different way of thinking to Metro as well. So I think it's nice to force competitors into rethinking how they present data, how they give a user experience, and then consumers will inevitably go with the platform that works the best for them. I'm sort of pleased that competitors are being forced to do other things differently, but I'm still a bit on the fence with the whole Apple, with Samsung losing against Apple.
All right, now moving on, local news. Well, there's actually a couple of local things going on. First up, I want to jump in on and talk about ultra-fast broadband. And I've been promising for months to talk about what it's like to have ultra-fast broadband in your home.
So hands up in the room if you've got UFB at home.
Just me.
How is it?
Yes.
It's pretty cool. So last Wednesday, the Chorus technicians came out and they started the install process. We actually hit a couple of bumps, but by Friday evening it was all running. And the speed of my home internet connection, I had a pretty fast ADSL connection at home anyway, so I was getting pretty good speeds. But the new connection with the fiber or ultra fast broadband is phenomenal. UFB rocks.
Wow.
So I did a little. I did a little test. I had a download I needed to do from Apple. It was I think 4.3 gigabytes. So I tried downloading that on my my existing connection, and it was downloading about 80 megabytes a minute worth of data. So you know, you could work that out. It was going to take quite a while to download. And after I had that started, I flicked it then across to the ultra-fast broadband connection, and it went from downloading at 80 megabytes a minute to 580 megabytes a minute. So for that 4.3 gigabyte file, you're talking, like eight minutes or something to download. Not too bad.
I remember when we used to do voice over IP installs back when we still had a phone system company. The installs that were by far the easiest and most straightforward were any companies that had fiber. The latency was really low, so high latency, and latency being the time taken to get from A to B, kills VoIP because you obviously can't have a phone conversation if it takes the other person a second to reply. Fiber is the Rolls Royce of internet connections. You really just can't get any better than that. All your services will run ridiculously fast. I suppose the one thing is that your upstream does have to be quick. If you've got really quick speed from A to B, so you're from your home to your provider, but your provider hasn't got the infrastructure or the backhaul from there, it's your, say, international browsing still going to be quite slow.
Yeah, well, I'm with Vodafone on their trial, and I was really pleased with the speed. So I did a speed test within Auckland, and I was seeing, in some cases, surpassing 90 megabits a second download speeds, which is getting pretty close to the actual speed that wire can deliver on a 100 megabits Ethernet connection, and upload speed of about 40 megabits a second, or just a little bit over. So that was pretty impressive. What impressed me also was the international speeds, which would change varying on time of day and various other things and which routers I was using, between my home and the US, I was getting download speeds of up to 30 megabits a second, and sometimes they'd be slower, but they'd usually sit between that 15 and 30 megabits a second range, which is pretty good for US. So one of the big benefits of that really is watching streaming videos, so Netflix and so on. Those services definitely a real step up from what they were before. Just that extra clarity and detail on the picture is fantastic.
So how does it actually terminate? So they connected it, the Chorus, it's on your road, and then Chorus actually connected that last mile from the road into your actual premises. How does it actually get from the road to inside your house?
Okay, well, that varies. So they started digging up my street, I think, in late May. And one side they had to dig up, the other side already had all the, most of the right bits and pieces in place, so they didn't have the same sort of level of work to do. And, effectively there was a little tube that was right by the power pole outside the house. And in this case, what they did was they put a bit of fibre in from the terminal up the street, what they call the FAT, and it's the fiber access terminal, and there's sort of like a manhole, there's a lid on it, they open it up and they can hook in at that point, and then they ran the fiber from there. And then in my case, because everything runs with overhead power lines and overhead phone lines, they ran that up the power pole and then across to the house. And at the same time, they have to remove city council says that if they put a new fibre across, they have to remove an old copper phone line. So they did that, but there are a few running into the house, so it didn't actually have a direct impact. So I was still able to keep the old system and the new one up and running to do a comparison. And then that terminates on the outside of the house where there's the ETP. Do you know what that stands for?
No idea.
Well, if you go to ufb.org.nz, there's a little glossary page, and on there it will tell you what all these little techie terms is to do with ultra fast broadband.
So once it's on the outside of your house, I assume they take that glass strand, they polish the end, plug it into a terminator.
Yeah, so they that connects on the outside of the house on the ETP, and then they connect that through into inside the house, and at that point is where I've forgotten the term of the internal connection. It is, someone remind me. No, okay, it'll come to me in a minute. So that terminates inside the house, and from there then there's a box from Chorus in my case, being in the Auckland area, but it depends on which region you're in, and then that's linked to a router. So in this case the router was supplied by Vodafone, so they provided a Cisco router in this case to connect to.
So then with the Cisco router, you just plug it into it, that would be then your main gateway for your network, and you plug your switch and all that other stuff into it.
That's right, yeah.
Was it, do you get much of a, can you dictate where on the house outside that chorus terminate or the fibre comes in, or do they, is there a, how do they actually work out where that because I'm thinking...
The ETP, which is the external termination point, is usually where your existing copper cabling terminates on the outside of the house.
Yep.
But that can, well, in my case, that was the situation. That doesn't, I don't think it always has to be that. It probably varies according to your situation on whether that's the case, or you could maybe choose somewhere a little bit different. Yeah.
Because I'm just thinking, if that termination point was on the front of your house, and at the moment the main phone socket's at the back of the house, and you've got this amazing fibre connection and a really slow wireless, because it's the only way to get the network to where the rest of the computers, is completely destroying the whole purpose. So I was just wondering if it's able to be able to put...
It probably doesn't matter where that goes, because you can run, you know, you can run a cable inside the house to any point to plug your router and so on into if you want to. So inside the house, that ETP is wired up to the ONT, or the optical network terminal. That's what Chorus are providing at the moment. And so that has a fibre connection straight into it. And then from there, you've got connections out for router and other things, which is just normal sort of network cabling that we're all familiar with.
So with fibre too, you could potentially move all your Gorilla hosted infrastructure to your home, couldn't you? And fall asleep to the gentle hum of the switch.
All sorts of possibilities, but it is quite cool having a connection at home that is better than 19. According to the speed tests I ran, my speeds are better than 99% of internet connections in New Zealand.
Which is not surprising at all.
So better than certainly what most small to medium businesses in New Zealand have. So, it's pretty cool.
How many IP addresses do you get with it?
You just get one, I believe.
But there'd be, assuming because it's fibre, there'd be the potential you could have a few IP addresses, so you could have a few devices that if you need them externally available, you could do that too.
I think there are ways of doing that. That'll come down to the providers. Usually with the lower cost plans, that usually means you've only got one IP address.
Yep.
But technically it's feasible to have more than one, to be connected to more than one retail service provider or internet service provider. So if we look at the ONT that Chorus are providing, there's four ports on the back, as well as two voice ports. So you potentially could have a video service provider like, well, let's say Sky decided that they were going to use this to deliver service rather than satellite. So they could have one of those ports that provides a video service. And, you know, another one could be with, say, Vodafone, or you could even have multiple. You know, you can have a connection with Vodafone, connection with Orcon, connection with WorldNet, etc.
That's pretty cool.
I haven't looked into that too heavily yet. I think it seems like the Chorus guys are really, really, flat out at the moment, because there, despite what we've heard in some of the media, there are pretty big waiting times to actually, for those houses where the cables have come past, there's waiting times to actually get installed because the demand is really starting to ramp up now, and there is an audience that is really keen to get ultra-fast broadband, and I can certainly understand why.
See, from a consumer's perspective, how do they, I think this is what interests me, how do they pick which suburb to go into first? Is it, how do they kind of know, hey, we're going to go Ponsonby first, Parnell, how about, you know, the ones that lives in West Auckland, or, yeah, how do they sort that out? Do you have any insights in regards to that?
That's probably something to ask Chorus or Crown Fiber. We may have had some discussion on it in the past, but I think what we've heard is the focus is really around the commercial results and education and hospitals. So that's the sort of the focus is on, you know, business, schools and you know, healthcare. So there's there is a really strong focus in those areas, but then there are also some residential areas that have, you know, that have been happening fairly early on in the piece as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, that all of the providers want to get this stuff rolled out as quick as they can, because as soon as it's in, they can start making revenue from it.
Okay.
So we're seeing certainly the smaller ones, you know, areas like Whangarei is all done or getting quite close to it.
Yeah.
That's under North Power that got that contract. So you know, there are some areas that are very well progressed like that. But Chorus has the majority of the country to do, so they've got a huge amount of work to do and new workforce to hire and so on.
Isn't there like a date that was, I think I saw it recently in an article that I think by 2016 or some. I'm not too sure of the date.
You know, 2020, I think, is when it's all supposed to be. It's all supposed to be finished.
Okay.
I did read a piece yesterday in an Australian publication, indicating that at mid this year, New Zealand was ahead of Australia in terms of rollouts because they're launching their equivalent of the ultra fast broadband network, the NBN.
Yeah.
We'd actually done more, but by mid next year they would be ahead and would have done more. But, you know, considering their budgets, you know, the government's putting in about $44 billion and our government's putting in $1.5 billion. I thought that was some pretty good pretty good results that you know, that they've managed to get this stuff moving. And they're getting it out at a, you know, what seems to be a reasonable sort of, you know, pace. I mean, there are a lot of opinions on what is and isn't a good pace for getting it out. But, you know, every few weeks we're hearing of, you know, little new areas that have been turned on. And they've just started in Nelson, Richmond area there, I think in the last week or so. Invercargill, other areas are starting to get plugged in. So it's not, you know, it's not just Auckland, for instance, it's getting it. It's, you know, we're starting to see a bunch of areas all around the country where the ultra-fast broadband is being rolled out.
I think the most interesting thing about this is that it'll be great to kind of get one of those businesses or individuals that lives out there to get their thoughts on it. Because, you know, for us city slickers, will be, you know, everything is mostly first world problems, but it'll be interesting to hear someone that is not used to, you know, something that's a fast ultra fast broadband, and then get their thoughts and how they has changed things. So I think that will be the interesting, I think, for me personally, to kind of see what the stories will come out of your Whangarei, your Nelson, you know, even like just the little towns that are out there in New Zealand.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly opens up communications and business opportunities in some of those areas. And I'm familiar with one of the situations in Northland at the moment where we're a not-for-profit organisation is going to be able to really leverage having access to this technology and for their organisation that they wouldn't have been able to do previously without this type of connection. Definitely some good stuff happening. Now, Chorus, who of course have got the majority of the contract for the ultra-fast broadband, they just announced some financial results, $102 million profit. It's not too shabby. after they've split off from Telecom, I think 7 months ago. So that's their initial things. But yeah, they seem to be getting a fair bit of press at the moment, and it looks like they're really keen to push the uptake of the ultra fast broadband, which makes sense because they're spending hundreds of million of dollars to roll this out, obviously with a lot of support from the government through Crown Fibre. I guess positive for those that are sitting on a few shares.
Yeah.
Which includes, of course, Paul Reynolds, who's left Telecom recently. And the news today was that he walked away with about $10 million. Not too bad.
Probably worth pointing out that he was the CEO of the largest telco in the country and the largest ISP. And I don't know, I always get a little bit wary when you see media reports complaining about how much they get paid. It's like the responsibility they've got and the ability for them to make a decision that could completely bankrupt the company is quite easy to do. So I do feel that someone in that position should be well not reimbursed, but whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think that they could, somebody in that position could make a $100 million decision or, lead the company in a direction that's usually far in excess of what they get paid. So, that's interesting.
Having said that, I wouldn't mind $10 million myself, so that'd be nice.
Yeah, well, there aren't too many people in the country that are earning that sort of coin.
No.
Now, other tech stuff. Robots. We haven't talked about robots for a little while.
I think I probably generated this one from my in my day job, I'm a developer, and I think the classic adage of a good developer.
A software developer rather than a...
not a property developer. No, yeah. I don't have that.
I'll just clarify that.
Don't have that much money I'm not that overcommitted with finances, most of them are.
Well, a lot of developers don't have much money either.
No, that's the truth. So a good programmer, everyone knows that's in the industry. We're a very, very lazy breed, and that makes good software if you're very lazy. So I've had my heart set on buying a Roomba for a long time, and for anyone who doesn't know what a Roomba is, it's a circular disc thing that pretty much vacuums your house.
Robotic vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, exactly. So it goes out, it can, I've been doing quite a bit of reading, which is quite embarrassing. So it can not only... It does all these sort of weird patterns to keep the house clean, but when it starts to go flat, it actually goes back to its docking station, redocks itself. The only thing I know it doesn't do is it's got no mechanism to empty itself, which I thought was, it's sort of, you're 90% of the way there, why not go the rest? I'm sure you can figure out a way for it to empty itself, but never mind, it can go back, redock itself, and after it's finished cleaning, and there's a few people that have actually hacked them to do all sorts of crazy things, and my mind's just got blank about any examples, but... Yeah, sort of taking the Roomba to the ridiculously next level.
Well, they have cameras and so on to guide them around in infrared and that sort of stuff, right? Mm. And there's a lot of variations on the technology. I mean, the Roomba comes from iRobot, doesn't it?
That's one.
Which is also the name of a particular movie where the robots go a bit...
crazy.
Psycho. So should we be scared about this company, iRobot?
Maybe.
Well, as long as there's a Will Smith out there to save us, we'll be fine, right?
Well, the interesting thing is iRobot, as well as making the Roomba, they also do a lot of military robot stuff. So they're an interesting company to look up if you want to go online and have a look. Quite fascinating, and I think they probably make a pretty large percentage of their revenue from what they do in the military space, or they're certainly hoping to. But from what I can see, the products don't quite match up with what we've seen in the movies.
Very Tony Stark, isn't it?
Yeah. Not quite yet, but who knows what's going on in the background? Who knows what the CEO, does in his spare time?
Oh, so that's what I saw in the sky.
But the interesting news in the last few days is that Honda have jumped in with a new product, the Mimo. Which is a robotic lawnmower. Now, a few of these have been around for a while, and they work in a to some degree a similar fashion to what Nate was describing with the robotic vacuum cleaners, but obviously, obviously with a bit more caution, they're outside, and I think some more parameters around where they're allowed to go and what they're allowed to run over, because they're the danger factor between a vacuum cleaner and a lawnmower. There's some sort of variation there.
I'm assuming too that the coverage pattern of a robotic lawnmower is going to be probably the traditional quarter acre section, nice and flat and reasonably straightforward. It's probably not going to be able to do sort of mountainous hills and all that sort of stuff.
I think they're more designed for the more and you know industrial sort of where you got bigger size spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been offered one yet to play with. So we will see. So if there's any robot manufacturers out there that would like to fire their gadgets at us, you know how to get hold of us.
And my house is really dirty, so I'd more than appreciate a robot.
Excellent. All right. So that's a good bit of gadget news. Now, VMob, that's a New Zealand company. That's they've just managed to get themselves onto the NZAX onto stock exchange. There, have you guys come across VMob? They're known for their voucher mob product in New Zealand, which is sort of a mobile electronic vouchers, and they're working to get into big international markets like Indonesia, where there's a lot of mobile users.
I suppose I've got a lot of opinion about not picking on voucher mob specifically, but the whole sort of voucher deal site thing.
Yeah. What is about it? Like, is it because it's kind of like hey, nice to meet you, see ya kind of thing, or is it do you prefer more of a loyalty scheme? Like, hey, we love your customer service, please come back.
Yeah, I also have a cafe in central Auckland, which keeps us very, very busy. So I've done a fair bit of experimentation with vouchers and everything, and this is my experience, so I'm sure that other industries and other people have probably had different experiences, but for us anyway, vouchers tend to bring in a very transient audience. So let's say if we did a grab one deal where you get, say, a free coffee, we could sell potentially 500 of them, but the percentage of people that would come back after using that coffee, which is the whole real idea around the vouchers, is to get people in the door, get them to experience your sort of, you know, the atmosphere, what your staff like, and all that sort of stuff, and get them to hang around and then hopefully come back and actually buy stuff that makes you money. In my experience, you get a very transient audience who will come and use that voucher. I remember even having an experience where we sold a voucher to a particular value. So you paid, I think ours was, you got $25 worth of value for $10. We were seeing this ridiculous thing where people would actually adjust the order to get exactly 25. They wouldn't spend a dollar over or a dollar less. It was really crazy. They'd stand there and work out exactly what $25 was. And so, no, it didn't really work for us. So you're
saying you potentially end up with the cheapskates that are kind of just looking for the deal, rather than those people that just happened across it. They're likely to just keep coming back.
Yeah. And you tend to cannibalize, I think, too, your regulars. Like, one of the biggest part of what we do is our regulars. You have to look after them and make sure they're happy because they keep coming back to you. So you've got that real danger that if, let's say, you're doing a free coffee special, that the regulars who spend a lot of money with you on coffee find it. Yeah. Stock up on these vouchers, yeah, and then your revenue stream with them too will drop. And there's also a sort of physicality thing too, is that most of our customers don't have smartphones. So it's really nice saying that we can cut down on paper, and it's really cool because we can send vouchers to customers and stuff. But from what I've seen, most of our customers don't have smartphones. So it's really nice in the sort of techie and geeky side, everyone has their smartphones and tablets and everything, but your average Joe Blogs, in my experience, and for hospitality customers, some of them still have the dirty old little Nokias, the little screens.
That's going to change pretty quickly though, isn't it? I mean, the numbers we're seeing is the cost of smartphones is going down, 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 and your, what was a cheap little Nokia, even the cheap-end Nokias now, they're not quite a full-blown smartphone, but they're getting pretty smart in terms of their capabilities. And certainly, you know, at the $300 or $400 price point, which, you know, once every smartphone was more than that, you know, you are getting some pretty powerful smartphones. So it won't be too long probably before the majority of your customers are smartphone users. But you're addressing that, right? You've got some quite good mobile capabilities with being able to order over Twitter, order over text message, so any smartphone can order, right?
Yeah. So we, the Computer World did a bit of a profile about me, about the, some custom stuff we've got running where you can order via Twitter direct message, or you can email us, or you can text us. And I've had a few customers ask me why, because we've got a mobile app sort of sitting in the background that we need to finish off and get up and going. And they've said, why don't you hurry up and get that going, or why don't you do that before text? And it comes back to that original argument that I've got where, yeah, our good customers and the customers that use us all the time don't have smartphones, so there's no point in building this really amazing smartphone app if no one's got the platform that it'll run on.
And they're happy just to send a text anyway. It's just as quick, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think a successful... I don't think businesses, well, hospitality businesses anyway, should rely on vouchers. I think it needs to be a planned attack of not only vouchers, but also a really good loyalty system that rewards your regular customers as well. And again, this is all what I've experimented with. Other businesses may find it could be completely different.
No, just to kind of picking up on that, completely agree, because I think deals and vouchers, it has that bad kind of brand awareness. It, you know, it depends on what sort of company put themselves out there, because it could easily, for consumers, it means that, oh, you really need to get your products out there. Is it does it mean that you're not making profit? You know, so I just think that deals website, it's great, but it's just depending on how a business kind of sell their products on it. And if they are using it as a way to get more customers, then that makes sense. But if they're doing it purely just as a revolving door, which is you come in and go out, then, you know, for a brand, which is great, but at the same time, for the longevity of that brand, is not that great. So, yeah. So,
good points. Now, just jumping across in a completely different direction. Not really, actually. Bit of a segue. Smartphones and mobile phones. There hasn't been probably too much activity over the last few weeks, but it's sort of starting to ramp up. So, and tablets as well. So we've got Samsung launching their Galaxy Note 10.1, I think, this week.
Yep, can't wait to get my hands on one.
So we're looking forward to having our hands on that one to have a bit of a play with. So we'll report back on that one soon. Also on the Android front, Telecom have recently launched the Motorola Defy XT, which is a little bit of a different sort of smartphone. It's not sort of really high-end in features, but it's all about being being tough and being dustproof and waterproof to a degree as well. So it's got little stoppers to go in where you plug your headphones and your charger and those things. So you can really lock the phone down. So you know, it hopefully doesn't get damaged if you're, you know, working out in the rain and doing those sorts of things. So
you're checking your phone in the shower.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Isn't that what we all do?
Oh,
actually, yes. I've never ever thought of that. But
that's an idea for you.
You could be super efficient.
That would be one way of reviewing it, is to see just how well it works in the shower.
Fair enough.
If there's a Roomba, then I'm sure there's a place for this.
So yeah, I've just been having a look at that. As I say, not really a particularly high-end smartphone. It's got a 5-megapixel camera, and yeah, older version of Android running Gingerbread, and it's $599. But I'm sure there's definitely a market out there for it. But it's probably a, you know, a smaller percentage of the audience. But I think this is one of the nice things about the variety we've got, the number of manufacturers in the mobile space now that are making devices, that there's room for these sort of unique phones, which if we say look to, you know, say the simplicity of what Apple like to do, which is not to have too broad a range of products, you know, if we didn't have so much competitiveness, then a product like this I don't think would come onto the market. But there is room for vendors like Motorola to come out with this sort of, you know, quite a unique smartphone into the market, and I think it's good to see. Other bits coming through, of course. September we're hearing about an iPhone 5, Windows phone announcement from Nokia and Microsoft. No doubt there will be some Android announcements next month too. They seem to be coming thick and fast. And October is the rumored launch for an iPad mini. Now, we've discussed this a few times in the past, but the reports seem to be more and more pushing in this direction. Nate, have you changed your opinion? Do you think an iPad mini is coming? Or are you still sitting on the other side of the fence? You don't think it's actually such a thing exists, nah, and that Apple will not bother with a smaller iPad?
No, Apple has the reputation that they don't lead, they follow. They don't follow, they lead. I mean, the other way around. No, I don't think they'll follow the other manufacturers. I reckon they'll stay to their... They've not sort of deviated away from the current sizing. I don't think this is going to be the time that they will. Could be completely wrong. As you know, not an amazing... I don't actually own any Apple hardware, so probably one of the worst people to ask. However, from my sort of looking in from the outside, no, I don't think they'll change. Although, John,
with your sticker-laden MacBook Pro there, what's your thought?
What I just can't, you know, from a usability perspective, you've got the iPad and you got the Mini. I understand that when it comes to the iPod, you got the iPod Mini, which makes sense. You know, when you go running, you don't want a big chunky thing that's, you know, hanging from your pocket. But from an iPad Mini, it just, you know, from an Apple perspective, it doesn't make sense. And then when they design something, it always makes sense. They always lead on a story on how it will improve your life. And then by having an iPad Mini, unless they can think of something I'm not thinking right now, then, you know, kudos to them. But I just don't see how it could improve my life, what I'm doing right now. So it's basically doing the same thing, but I'm just thinking outside the box how it could fit within my life. When is the time where I need to go, oh, I don't want to pick up my iPad, I want to pick up my iPad Mini? So I'm just kind of looking from that perspective. So if they do, then I look forward to Tim Cook explaining why we need this in our life.
That's actually that's an interesting point.
So because every time when we always question an Apple product that we're not sure of, they've always got something that makes you want to have tears in your eyes because, oh my goodness, why have you've just kind of made my life so much easier. So that's why I enjoy watching, you know, when the video becomes available, I enjoy the way how they explain how it will improve your life even better, because that is the part that I think Apple is great at it, which is the reason. So if they do manage to come out with an iPad Mini, then I look forward to that story.
So that raises for me a question. What do you think comes first, the product or the story?
The story. Like, for me, it's the story because...
No, what do you think Apple start with, though? Do they design a product and then come up with a story that makes everyone cry?
Yeah.
Or do they come up with the story that makes everyone cry and then come up with a product that meets that?
Cool. That's a real interesting call.
Food for thought.
Food for thought.
Okay. Now, next week we've got Microsoft TechEd, so that's just a few days out as well. So Project Revolution, end of this week, then next week kicks in with Microsoft TechEd. Mm-hmm. So that's our closest events. One more product that I did want to cover off that I haven't had a chance to in the last few weeks. We talked a bit in the past about Bluetooth units for phones, and particularly Bluetooth stereos, car stereos for the car. And this is something that I've found is a real big leap up from having one of those little Bluetooth units that you attach onto your sun visor, is actually having a car stereo that does the whole Bluetooth function. Mm. And the reason why I started looking at these products is just the sheer simplicity of them to use. So with the little ones that go onto the visor, if you park too close to your house and you're in the house and it's still getting picked up on the on your Bluetooth unit, if you have to get into the habit of remembering to turn it off, And it doesn't really integrate if you're listening to music on your stereo and so on. So I've found that the Bluetooth car stereos are just fantastic. You can listen in to podcasts or radio or whatever, and you know, it'll pause or stop those if a call comes in. And depending on what mobile platform you're on, you know, it may be able to do things like reading out your text messages and so on. So I tried out last year one of the Sony products, and that was really good. But at CES, JVC announced their new one, which was the KDX50BT. This retails here in New Zealand for about $350, but I've seen them out there for as low as $250. And this is a pretty powerful stereo head deck. The reason they've been able to bring the price down for such good functionality is they've actually dropped the CD player out of the head deck. So all your you know, all your audio really is coming straight through off the phone, or there's still a radio tuner and so on in there as well. And I've been really, really impressed with this JVC deck. Mm. And it includes a microphone as well, which a lot of the other ones you've got to you know, you've got to spend maybe another $50 to get a microphone to, you know, to wire up as well to get that sort of best quality sound. So yeah, not too bad. I'm sure there'll be much higher price point ones, but just at a sort of a basic level, this one seems to be fine for me. And those that are just, you know, wanting to get a stereo head deck, it's well worth looking at one of those for your car. So
I've got a Pioneer Bluetooth head unit, which I paid quite a bit of money for. I'm not a big car fan, but car audio, if I could choose anything out of a car, I would always install a really nice stereo system, which I have in my car.
Well, you're much more of an audiophile than me, aren't you?
Yes. And having, you know, all the reasons that you've said about having the integrated Bluetooth is, you know, I agree with every reason Paul said. Another nice thing which you didn't cover was the fact that you've got a microphone and the fact you can keep the phone in your pocket. My one supports that you can upload your phone book to the unit.
Yeah, so likewise, it's great.
I think you can support 200, it's not many numbers, so maybe 200 odd numbers. But the nice thing is that when my phone rings and if the number's in the head unit, will pop up with their name and I can either accept or decline the call directly off the head unit and it pauses music. And so if you haven't got one and you're looking at upgrading your head unit in your car, I highly, highly recommend getting one that is Bluetooth supported. And interesting, you're talking about them dropping the CD player support. I would happily use my stereo without even radio, because all I listen to is USB. So I just, one device I would like to be able
USB?
To... USB? Yeah.
Do you actually plug it in rather than just do over Bluetooth?
Yeah, because... Okay.
You get better sound?
I get better sound, and I'm having some trouble with my S2 at the moment, so it's not the best for keeping a Bluetooth connection up. It would be nice if, you know, you could have a little unit in your car where as soon as you pull into your driveway and it gets Wi-Fi coverage, it would somehow, you know, synchronize your libraries between your desktop and your head unit. That would be really cool. But I'm sure the higher-end head units will probably get it.
I personally don't think you need that, because the storage is all in the phone and your whole, you know, library comes with your phone in theory, and what and access to what's in the cloud, you know, is obviously opening up more and more. I guess if you had a big enough storage, and they've also got, you know, USB connections in them too, right? So you can plug in a thumb drive with, you know, a whole you know, huge amount of music or podcasts. What I do is I when I'm driving around, instead of listening to the radio like I once did, I'll be listening to a podcast that I've synchronized on my phone overnight. I've used the Galaxy S3, and I try lots of different phones as well throughout the year. But one thing I really enjoy about my Windows phone that I'm using at the moment is that it does a really good job of synchronizing all that content down in terms of podcasts overnight. So I jump in the car in the morning, I've got new podcasts to listen to. And the other thing it does, which still seems to be reasonably unique, even though we've got Siri and we've got voice recognition in the Galaxy S3 and a number of the other Android smartphones, is if I'm listening to something and a text message comes in, it'll say pause that podcast, or it'll stop the radio and it tells me I've got a text message, offers to read it out. It'll read the text message out to me, and then it will give me the opportunity to reply while I'm driving, while my hands are still on the wheel, my phone's still in my pocket. I can do a short reply to a message and it will send that reply back without having, you know, to you know, be dangerous and pull the phone out and be texting while driving. So I can actually text while driving using that capability quite safely. So yeah, that's one of the cool little features.
Thinking of head units, I was looking. So I'm diving at it a little bit. I'm a massive fan of Spotify. I love Spotify. I listen to it at work all the time and at home. Mm. And I was looking for a native bit of hardware that I could just have at home that would I could plug into the stereo and it would just work. It's in the States. They've actually got head units that natively support Spotify. So you put a SIM card into the head unit, and you can run Spotify off your head unit, and obviously the data plans are unlimited data for nothing a month. So you could be running Spotify off your head unit and just driving around listening to it streaming. I just think it's fantastic.
Yeah, one thing that I missed on my last trip to the States was that was scheduled in, but in the end I had to cancel it. Was a session to visit to Ford's Research and Development Center that they've recently opened in Silicon Valley. And Ford are now talking about the car as being a platform in the same way we talk about a PC or an iPhone or a tablet as a platform that you develop software for. And so that's why they've set up in Silicon Valley. And there's all these apps and things that you can run for your car. And of course that, you know, it ties into the various elements of the car, but they have Spotify app and, you know, all sorts of apps and so on now that you're able to run, and they're really trying to encourage that sort of development. So, it's heading in that direction where, you know, we used to start out with, say, you'd use a smartphone and you'd access something off the web, and then we came with apps on the phone. Now those apps could be in the car, so you'll jump in the car and it'll have smarts to do all sorts of cool stuff.
So more people will be spending time on the road. Driving all the way to Hamilton for no reason.
just to use the app in their
just
car.
Just a road trip it, just to, yeah, listen.
Well, I don't know about that. I guess we've got to hope that the technology keeps getting better across the board with cars. But probably not an area that we're seeing a whole lot of development from in New Zealand, are we? There's not too much that happens really here, car wise, other than there's a car and marine audio specialist out of Auckland. Anyone remember the name? Fusion Audio.
Yeah.
So those guys are doing some cool stuff. I saw them at Consumer Electronics Show as well. So they seem to be getting out and exporting globally and competing against the likes of the Pioneers and Sonys and so on. So it's good to see a little bit of New Zealand action on the international market. But I don't think we've got any immediate car launches coming out of here. Although that would be kind of cool. Other than who are the guys that do the car that goes on the water? Sorry, I've dropped you guys and I've completely forgotten the name.
I'm looking at you blankly going, I don't know.
Anyway, more cool technology out of New Zealand. So there's pretty much a bit of everything coming out of this country. Love it. Well, I think that's probably us for this week. I think we've filled our allotted time with all sorts of chit chat. Hope everyone listening in has learned something. And if you are about at any of those conferences that are coming up, please come and say hi. And look out for us online. Nate, where do we find you online?
I blog pretty much all the time on GeekZone, so just go to the front of geekzone.co.nz. Or on Twitter, just at Nate.
And John?
Well, the easiest point of connection with me is at I am John Lai. You can't go wrong with that.
You just love Twitter, don't you?
I don't know. It's just so easy. I just love it.
Awesome. And you can find me on Twitter at Paul Spain. And like Nate, I blog on Geek Zone from time to time. With my techjungle.com blog. And also a point, we were talking about UFB earlier. We have expanded what was a one-page bit of info around the different ultra-fast broadband options and pricing from the NZ Tech Podcast site. That's now set up on a standalone site, ufb.org.nz. So feel free to have a look there if you're interested in finding out a little bit more about ultrafast broadband. And of course, you can find the NZ Tech Podcast online, nztechpodcast.com, and we're also NZ Tech Podcast on Twitter and on Facebook. Hey, thanks everyone for listening. Catch you next week.
Thank you.
See ya.